He carries a 9mm, too, all the time. They had issued Killifer a brand-new Browning machine pistol. 50 rounds, either semi or full-automatic. It still smelled of packing grease. "But the butler only works the day shift, doesn't he?" Killifer asked. The chief hiked an eyebrow. "The butler works until they both go to bed. He don't sleep until they do." "Uh-huh. So all you've got to do is patrol outside, make yourself look like a gardener, and keep an eye out for strangers. What about people coming up to the house in cars?" "You don't have to worry about that. The two inside guys take care of that, and the butler." One of the inside guys was a terrific-looking redhead, Killifer had already discovered. "Hard as nails, though." "What's she need all this security for?" he asked, probing for weak spots in the security system. "You don't need 6 people and machine pistols for burglars." The chief shrugged carelessly. "I don't ask, and they don't bother to let me in on their secrets. It's a cushy job, so don't knock it." Killifer shrugged back at him. "Yeah, okay. But I'd kind of like to know what I'm supposed to be looking out for." Eyeing the display screens, the chief muttered, "Religious fanatics." "What?" "She's worried about fanatics from the new morality trying to kill her." "No shit." The chief's tick of displeasure told Killifer that he was probably a believer himself. "If some religious nutcase wanted to kill her, why not just drive a car bomb into the house?" "Not their style," said the chief. "The fanatics do their killing face to face, and they don't believe in taking out innocent people when they hit somebody. Besides, she's in and out so much, travels all the time, really. You can't be sure she's home unless you actually see her." "Yeah," said Killifer. "I guess that's right." "Listen," the chief said, suddenly intense, leaning across his desk to stare directly into Killifer's eyes. "Don't judge the new morality movement by the actions of a few crazies. Most of those assassins are foreigners, not Americans. Fanatics." Killifer nodded, knowing that the chief was certainly a believer. "Wonder what he'd say if I told him I worked for the Urban Corps, and that General O'Connor, his own God Almighty self, has sanctioned the assassination of Joanna Brudnoy." It had been ridiculously easy to get hired onto the Masterson security team that guarded Joanna's house. New morality adherents had faked his employment record in the corporation's computer files and provided a lucrative transfer to one of the women employed in the house guard detail. Killifer had miraculously popped out of the personnel files and been taken on within 2 days. The weakest link in the security system is the system itself, Killifer knew. Manipulate the system and make it work for you. The next step is to get into the house on the night detail, when the butler's asleep and Joanna's in her bedroom where there are no cameras watching. Moonbase. "Well, how much of the stuff can you make?" Vince Falcone asked, his patience obviously fraying. "How much time do I have?" asked the head of the chemistry lab. "I don't know." "Then I don't know either." "Days," said Doug, stepping between them. "Maybe only 2 days, maybe a few more." "2 days?" the chemist gasped. She pushed back a strand of dark blonde hair from her forehead. "Only 2 days?" Doug wondered where she'd been all this time. "We're expecting the peacekeepers' attack before this week is out," he said. She looked past Doug to Falcone. "How much do you need?"
4 tons.
She blinked, swallowed. Then, straightening her back, she said, "We'll have to get the processing plant devoted completely to the job." Falcone's frowning, swarthy face relaxed slightly.
"Maybe 3 tons will do."
The chemist shook her head. "Still, that's impossible to produce in 2 days. We don't have any time to lose." "Can you come close?" Doug asked. She was a petite wisp of a woman, her orange coveralls stained and faded from hard use.
"We generate the foam gel as part of the process for making the insulation tiles we use for flooring and wall covering and all."
The insulating tiles were a small but consistent export to the space stations in Earth orbit, Doug knew. Moonbase also exported an even smaller but growing trickle of them to building contracting firms on Earth.
We'll have to shut down the back end of the production line, the chemist was musing, and rev up the foam gel production end.
She looked up at Falcone again. To Doug, they seemed like a dark, lumpy storm cloud and a light, graceful swirl of cirrus.
I can put all the raw stock we have on hand into producing foam gel, but I'll need more raw materials. Every tractor you can get, scooping regolith.
You got it, Falcone promised. Doug left them huddled together over her phone console and hurried down the corridor to Zimmerman's nano lab. One of the base's best tractor teleoperators, Nick O'Malley, had been assigned to work with the professor. But if we need every tractor scooping outside, I'll have to shift Nick back to his regular job. He could hear their arguing voices from 50 meters down the corridor, Zimmerman's heavy rumbling and O'Malley's higher-pitched yells. Nick's not taking any guff from the professor, Doug thought as he pushed through the door marked Nanotechnology Laboratory, Prof. Zimmerman, Authorized Personnel Only.
So you are the expert here and not me?
Zimmerman was bellowing angrily.
I know more about it than you do, damned right I do, shouted O'Malley, red-faced.
Stop it, Doug commanded. Shut up, both of you. Zimmerman whirled on Doug, his loose jacket and vest flapping like sails with the wind taken out of them.
An assistant you gave me, a Führer you gave me, a dictator.
What's the problem? Doug asked as calmly as he could.
He thinks he is the professor and I am his student, Zimmerman complained loudly.
I only said
you are not to say, Zimmerman roared. You are to do. You are my assistant, not my colleague.
Professor, please, Doug insisted. What is the problem? Gesturing with both hands, Zimmerman grumbled.
He thinks to tell me what I should do. He thinks he is the expert here.
All right, Doug said, trying to be soothing. He turned toward O'Malley. Nick?
I just said that if he needs nanobugs to act like dust, why doesn't he just use the flaming dust itself?
You see?
Zimmerman snapped. Wait a minute, said Doug.
Nick, what do you mean?
O'Malley sucked in a deep, deep breath. Doug realized he was trying to hold on to his own temper. He was a big man, and if he got truly angry, there could be real trouble.
What I mean, he said slowly, is that we don't need to invent nanomachines that behave like dust particles. We can pump the corridor sections full of regular lunar dust. Run them through an electrostatic grid so they'll stick to the peacekeeper's suits and visors just like you want them to.
An electrostatic grid?
We can rig that up easy. Just need to connect some electricity to the air filter screens in the corridors.
We, he keeps saying, Zimmerman muttered.
Doug put a hand on the old man's shoulder.
Professor, I think he's right.
And I am wrong?
Forcing a smile, Doug said,
No, but we don't have time to produce your specialized nanomachines.
Nick's worked out on the surface. He knows how the dust clings to suits.
So I must sit back and retire like a useless old man?
No, not at all, Doug said. You can work with Chris Cardenas on the medical side. We're going to need your nanomachines to take care of the injured and wounded.
Zimmerman huffed out an enormous sigh.
You expect injured and wounded?
How many?
I have no idea, Doug answered truthfully.
The professor turned away and walked a few steps deeper into his lab. Then he spun around and pointed a trembling finger at O'Malley.
Very well. Go play with your verdamped dust. I will stay here and do important work.
O'Malley started to reply, but one glance at Doug and he shut his mouth with an audible click of teeth.
We need you, Professor, Doug said softly. You know that. I need you. Moonbase needs you.
Yeah. While you and this young Lummox here go out to fight, I sit here like a dreamer.
It's your dreams that we're fighting for, said Doug.
Then he took O'Malley by the arm and led him out of the nanotechnology laboratory. Harry Clemens seldom showed tension. Word around Moonbase was that he didn't have any bones, that's why he always looked so relaxed. But he was sitting rigidly in one of the little swivel chairs in front of a console in the control center, eyes riveted on the screen that showed the little tubular rocket vehicle as the launch computer counted aloud, 4, 3.